As a translator, you spend much more time with a book than any other reader because you live kind of intimately with it for many months. You get to see the works, you see how the author works with time, characters, the plot. Somehow, I guess, you learn by osmosis. It gets under your skin somehow. Having translated some 20 plus books, I guess I must have learned subconsciously some tricks of the trade. By being a reporter at Radio Prague, I think it had a crucial impact on me because I was all of a sudden, without any prior writing experience, I was thrown in the deep end. I had to compile a story about a subject I knew very little about in a very limited period of time, like 3 hours. In a language that wasn't my own, and convey the story to an audience that knows very little about the Czech Republic. So it teaches you to express yourself very concisely, to drop all mannerisms, to get straight to the point, to think of punchlines, etc. So I guess these two put together are the best ever, or the toughest school of creative writing I can imagine.
My wife has a word for it. And it's vipsani, which I don't know what that would be in English. It just, if you've been writing for a while and you kind of get into it, it's like if you're lifting weights in the gym, after a while it becomes second nature, I guess.
That's it, because after that I started writing in Czech as a journalist or reporter, and having switched from English to Czech, I felt like I was flying because, you know, all the weight of the foreign language disappeared and I was able to express myself freely in my own language. And from then on, I wrote for magazines, newspapers, and also I started writing my own stuff. And it went surprisingly easily because everything that I did before that was much more difficult.
I want to ask a little bit about some of the translations that you did. Which authors were, say, closer to your temperament, to your heart? And maybe if you ever found yourself in a situation where you took on a job, maybe a well-known writer, but the style like literally clashed, and what do you do then?
I guess it was most of the times, actually, because I never chose my translations. I was always offered the job, and I usually took it without any emotional preferences, and I took it professionally. And I guess the fact that I never really felt close to the book that I translated may have been for the better, because had I been too emotionally involved or aesthetically pleased by the book, I would have been maybe overwhelmed or intimidated by it, and then I would have maybe not done a very good job. I don't know, it's just my guess. But of course the authors I translated are respected and distinguished and great and award-winning. But I can see the value of the books. Like Saul Bellow is incredibly intelligent, incredibly smart, clever. Kurt Vonnegut the same. Ian Banks and his famous pun per page rate. They all pose different challenges to me. But I never really felt close to any of the books, I guess. Maybe it's a pity that I couldn't enjoy the translating as much as my colleague who are really in love with their authors. But I guess it might have been a healthy distance in my case.
Speaking of the radio, you said you were thrown into the deep end there, and that often you would get different topics. Sometimes you find your own, and other times you're given something and, you know, do it. I know from reading your book that kind of served as a good breeding ground in the end, didn't it?
Yes, obviously, because it's such a great opportunity to learn new things. You meet new people, you learn about different subjects, different areas of human enterprise, and it would be a pity not to use that in your own work. So that's how my the young adult trilogy about the children's gang of so-called burying beetles came to life, because I did a few interviews with people who work at the Prague Olšanské cemetery, and I took inspiration from that for this book, some of the researches that are being carried out in the fictional institute are actually researches that I did interviews about. And I can't think of anything now, but there are many, many things that actually come from my career as a journalist.
You don't have to give all the secrets away. That's up to the reader to try to discover. But one of the things that struck me when I was reading it was that this institute, which I later learned has like real roots. At first I figured it would be, you know, a one-to-one kind of a bit of a parody of Czech radio, which it isn't, but I do recognize certain elements. It seems to me kind of the bureaucratic way of doing things, and even Czech radio is represented in another form. So I wanted to ask you, what kind of place was it where the actual studies were done, and what were some of the studies?
Well, the fictional institute is called the Institute of Interdisciplinary Human Studies, and it's based on an actual institution that was located in the actual building that it's in the book. And it was part of the Faculty of Humanities. And they carried out a number of really interesting researches, such as they studied talking parrots, or they studied the face or the attractiveness, perceived attractiveness of women during their menstrual cycle. And when I first decided that my main character would be a researcher in a humanities field, I immediately thought of this institute, and I immediately saw her there. And of course, many of the researches that are being carried out in the fictional institute I just made up, but these two in particular were actually researches.
Will you reveal one that you made up?
One of the characters observes and studies the way mothers and daughters dress, because she notices that they tend to pick similar clothes, even similar haircuts, and she takes photographs of them and documents this. Or there's also another scientist who studies people's preferences in food, and whether they are inborn or congenital, or whether they are acquired, such as someone not liking tomatoes, and then he tries to compare those people and find similar characteristics like the DNA and stuff. Also, one of the characters studies zákon schválnosti in Czech. I think in Russian it's called the law of the buttered bread, which means that the slice of bread always falls down, face down on the floor. And he studies these phenomena and tries to establish whether it's only our perception or whether there is such a thing as a buttered bread law.
Now, your book has been described as being at least in part magical realism. I love your main character, Ada's thought processes, the way she goes down the street, the way she's constantly, the wheels are turning, and she's thinking always through these different frames, which is, would this make this kind of a study, and so on. And then there's this aspect of Šumperk. Is it fair to say that this town or this area in the Czech Republic, that it is kind of like a, I don't know, Area 51 or Twilight Zone for this country?
I don't have any objective data, of course, but I've been noticing strange things happening in and around Šumperk for a very long time. First, I think I noticed that back in around 2000, and when the word Šumperk appeared like three times on the news, I asked my dad, "Dad, what do you think about these strange things happening only in Šumperk?" And he dismissed it with saying, "Oh, it's probably the local correspondent of the news agency. He has nothing to do, so he embellishes the stories, or maybe he reports every little thing that goes on in the region." And then when I worked at Radio Prague and I had the wires open all day in front of me, I monitored it, and I found out that it wasn't just one person reporting from the region, it was three different people, and the stories were always bizarre and not always human-made or man-made. Sometimes they concerned strange natural phenomena, such as a bolt of lightning striking a herd of cattle, or an icicle falling down a building and killing a person, or really, really strange phenomena. So I started collecting them, and I put together, during my 6 years as a full-time reporter at Radio Prague, I collected some 70 pages worth of those stories. Then I was not as diligent later, but I kept an eye on the news, and whenever something popped up, I copied it and pasted it in my Schumperk file. And then I used many of them in the book, not all of them, of course, because not all of them deserved it. And also I always tried to match the news item with what was going on in any given chapter, so it always somehow fits in the plot.
That's interesting, because it's too often to be a coincidence, and that was one point when I began to question whether Ada is an objective narrator or not, whether she's a reliable narrator.
None of us are reliable, really, and as we know, it's the observer who influences the effect of any given research or experiment. Maybe Ada putting so much or giving so much attention to the Schumperk region is responsible for the strange phenomena. Or maybe myself, you know, having spent so much time watching Schumperk, I'm responsible for that.
Since you bring in this element of both magic and science, it leads me to my next question, because there is a point where science and magic meet now. Anybody who's ever spoken to a quantum physicist or discuss string theory, these are so counterintuitive to our everyday experience that I guess in a way it is magic.
They are and they are not, because all of us have experienced at least once something that defies logic or natural laws, I guess. But we tend to dismiss these experiences, you know, this can't be true, this couldn't have happened, this is in total contradiction to the Newtonian or Cartesian model of the universe, it can't be true. But Ada realizes that she has to leave this comfy Newtonian world because there's so much happening around her which defies any common sense or the rules of our world, and she opens herself up to these phenomena and tries to in her own mind merge quantum mechanics with some kind of spiritual ideas. She finds out that what current science says and what the old spiritual gurus or masters used to say is not in contradiction, it's not in clash, that these two can be merged and offer a more fulfilling and free and fun way to look at the world around us.
I wanted to ask you about the graphic design. It's a wonderful bold pink, and you're on the cover, so I got a big kick out of it because I saw it first in one of the metro stations going down the escalator, and I thought, oh, there's Pabla. I saw you had published a book, which has now become a kind of one of the big hits of this Christmas, so congratulations. And tell me a little bit about how the look for the book came together.
Actually, you're the first one to ask about me being on the cover, because I guess it's not that usual that the author is on the cover. My editor and I initially thought about bright, bold colors, even kitsch, to be in contrast with the heavy title, which is The Theory of Strangeness. Initially, it was supposed to be a structural theory of strangeness. So we wanted a contrast of the title and the look of the book. We asked a graphic designer, and we weren't really happy with what she gave us. So we turned to another graphic designer, and my editor thought about putting a picture on the cover of myself, and he found a profile picture of me on Facebook, and the one he preferred, and sent it to a different graphic designer, and she, like overnight, she gave us this, something that we would never think of. Actually, she put my picture upside down, which underlines the idea of strangeness. And we would never, ever have been able to think about something like that. So, yeah.
The fact that it's upside down is striking. The fact that it's also like across the spine, that you're basically cut, but that the picture continues. The lettering also is I like a lot. It's a bit of an evergreen style question for me regarding books, but I guess a lot of readers are people who are like, they love the tactile, and they like opening and closing and going back to the cover. back and forth, so that's just an added enjoyment, I guess.
I really love it. We're really happy with the book.
Pablo, thank you so much, and until next time.
Thank you.